Is your daily grind getting you down? A ThermoSpa's hot tub may be the solution. Just a few minutes under those powerful, soothing jets, and all your stress seems to melt away, like you're lying on a cloud of bubbles. You'll not only feel better, but sleep better, too. Call 877-861-4672 now, and for a limited time, save $1,250. Call 877-861-4672, or visit thermospas.com to schedule a free on-site assessment.
Wow, we've got our peaches have been cobbled this week. We'll get to that in a minute. And as a programming note, if you want to hear more about our thoughts on Summer House, you're going to have to join our Patreon. We're going to keep these episodes Housewives focused. So if you want other content outside of Real Housewives, please check out our Patreon, www.patreon.com/realmomsbravo. Let's dive into third part of Salt Lake.
Well, somebody beat me to the meme, but as I was watching this, I'm like, oh, how cute. Jen and Lisa got the same terrible spray tan together that did not like blend in well at all. Did you notice Mr. Barlow's face?
It was the first thing I noticed. Kyle was like, oh my God, her hands were really bad. Lisa's hands were really bad. John, you know, some people just accept and appreciate your pale skin. Like, there's not everyone's meant to be tan. There's a reason why we're born with the color of skin that's been given to us.
I mean, there was been a lot of conversation regarding, like, we were texting about it with Amelia Gray about, you know, like racial appropriation and making your skin look like it's five shades darker via makeup. And I just like kind of had flashbacks. It's not the same thing, but I was just in that moment and then would seeing John Barlow, like flashbacks of myself in middle school, where I thought if I just bought foundation that was like four shades darker, I would just look really tan. And it doesn't work like that. So I think, like, notes to all those people out there with paler skin, even though you have more freckles, embrace it. It just looks so much better than trying to be a different shade of skin. And if you have super dark skin, embrace it. Like, I think if there's anything we've learned from this episode and from a lot of things going on, it's like, you should just embrace what you have. Cause the more you try to make yourself look like something else, it doesn't turn out well.
Flat. I mean, yeah, no, it's funny that you're saying that about the makeup. So I will never forget my seventh grade dance. I had this floral skirt from the Limited. My outfit was like a second grade school teacher. I had a floral like knee length skirt, a white tank top, and like a purple lavender cardigan. And my hair was half up. And I remember shopping for makeup, and I was insistent on buying the makeup on my own. It was like my first time wearing makeup, and got my makeup was too light. So in all the pictures, I look like a ghost. And thankfully, there's more makeup out there for brown girls like me. But in seventh grade, I'm like forever traumatized. And I don't know that I ever went back to foundation because of that.
I think everyone had a bad foundation story at one point in their lives when they were younger. Like, I actually kind of had the same thing. Like, we didn't have digital cameras and we didn't have smartphones. So I didn't know how bad I looked until people got their disposable cameras developed at the 1 hour Walgreens, and they brought them to school on Monday. And that's what you did in homeroom. So for any, like, I doubt we have a lot of Gen Z people out there, but like, this is what us millennials did. And I remember, I was like, oh my God, I look terrible. I can't do this dark foundation anymore. So I did the opposite and I went too light. And you look like a ghost. You look like you're like, something's wrong with you.
I was mortified looking. Yeah, exactly. I had no idea until I saw the pictures. And then the moment you're so confident and you feel so good.
I love the way you describe that outfit, because I remember wearing something very similar to a dance that was like a mixer, and you're supposed to be like trying to, you know, impress boys. I wore a khaki skort. Do you remember skorts?
Yes, I do.
And I had a denim sleeveless like button down that I wore tucked in. And then I had my Doc Martens sandals, and I had my hair. I actually had it half up as well. So you and I were like just walking, just walking boners for young boys, clearly, with that, those outfits. It's sometimes it's like amazing that I actually had a boyfriend in middle school when I look back at photos.
I did it, and God, oh, well, anyhow, yeah. Now that we've walked
well, pivoting
that way, we've walked down memory lane. Okay, how did you feel about Robert, Mary's husband, and all of Andy's questions regarding their relationship?
I don't think Andy was out of line. And I know he asked the same question twice, but I had to go back. I'm like, wait, Robert told him, like, ask it again. I kind of felt bad for both Robert and Mary. I feel like Mary did the show hoping maybe it would shine some light on her church. And maybe, like, cause I think she really does look at her church more as a business versus like a vocation in a way to spread the word. And, so I think she did this for business reasons. And I think Robert really didn't want to do it. And I think you can see that, cause he said he had a lot of hesitations. He didn't want to do it. She's like, no, you didn't. No, you didn't. He's like, for me, about me, I did. So I think he did it for her and for the church. And so I don't know, my heart just kind of broke for him, which I know sounds weird because I think in some ways he like took advantage of a young girl, but I don't know. I found myself sympathizing with him.
That whole dynamic, I feel like the more I think about it, I feel like it's just really unhealthy all around. And it just kind of makes me feel uncomfortable when I really sit there and think about it. But on a surface level, I mean, I'm not saying Mary's a good person. Obviously, there's a lot of shit that's gone down and it's come out. Abby shared the Reddit thread regarding their church, but just isolating to that moment of the reunion, I did kind of feel bad for Robert. Clearly, Mary wears the pants and what she says goes.
Yeah. I mean, basically. I want to get into Jen Shaw and Coach Shaw, but before we dive into that, I know you made a note about this, and I think maybe the most heartbreaking part for me, though, was Whitney talking about her dad.
It was very, very sad. I mean, we've heard her mention this a few times before they filmed the reunion. And as far as we know, we don't have any new updates about her dad, but it's just it's really sad. I can't imagine what it's like to have a family member going through addiction and just them disappearing, especially during a pandemic where we already feel so isolated as is.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. I kept hoping maybe we'd get an update, but she hasn't posted anything. So, and maybe he's okay and he's asking for privacy. That's kind of like, I'm always trying to think like the silver lining or some positivity there. But yeah, there has not been any updates. So hopefully he's okay and taking care of himself. I do want to talk about Jen Shaw. I was texting you about it. I was so confused by Jen because she brought up all the race stuff and was basically saying that as a woman of color being called aggressive, and that saying that she was threatening people is like damaging and they don't understand. And I know there's a lot of truth to that. I think back to Big Brother when Bailey was like saying like, as black woman, I can't be seen yelling at this white woman. Cause then I'm the crazy black woman. So I will just let her sit here and yell at me. And I'm just not going to say anything because I don't want to be known as the crazy black woman. And that's how I will be stereotyped. So I know that's very, very true. However, I felt like Jen Shaw was super aggressive. She did threaten people. Like I don't think anyone was marginalizing her.
You know, watching Jen Shaw, the number one thing Jen Shaw lacks is accountability. It's never, I'm sorry, I did this. It's always, I'm sorry, I did this because of, you know, there's never an apology there. And you're right. I mean, I'm sure she was easily triggered, and I don't doubt the microaggressions and the things that she experienced growing up in a predominantly white area, Utah. I don't doubt for a second the things that she experienced are true, but I don't feel like in the situations that we were presented with that the women were treating her differently because of that. They were judging her based on her actions. They were judging her based on how she treated her friendships. Apparently her calling Heather a Shrek and telling her she dresses at Dress Barn, her telling Meredith, disclosing the details of their marriage, her calling Mary's husband a grandpa fucker or whatever.
Yeah.
They're judging her based on those actions and truly her friendship, her loyalty. So I felt like it really kind of pissed me off that she was using that and pivoting the conversation to that instead of acknowledging the core issues at hand. It honestly kind of pissed me off because I'm like, okay, like you're taking away from that and you're not acknowledging your wrongdoing in all of that. You, like you said, Abby, she did, she was aggressive towards the women. She pushed them. Like, she's not taking any accountability. It's really weird. Also, side note, I'll get off my soapbox here, but it's really strange watching Jen Shah in this reunion because I feel like she's been coached very heavily and just like has scaled back a lot.
Yeah. I mean, you saw her get a little heated, but that was really like the most heated we saw her get. I did think it was interesting because she said, I didn't want to, you know, get into all the race stuff. I'm like, you brought it up. Like this conversation wasn't sparked by like Andy or somebody else, you know, like she did bring it up. And I do think that I actually was impressed. Like Meredith kind of stepped in and said, look, none of us are denying that, you know, there's no, like that white privilege, you know, doesn't exist. Like we are definitely agree that is something that goes on and that, you know, you have had a different like road because of like, you know, I can't remember exactly what she worded it, but she definitely acknowledged, like she understands that Jen has had, you know, been hurt just by the way she looks, but that wasn't really what was happening in that moment. But I thought she did a good job of just saying, we're all trying to learn. And I think like what Jen Shah probably read that as is like, oh good, they're trying to learn how to be a better friend to a woman as color. But I think Meredith also meant that as like, Jen needs to also kind of learn how to maybe be a better friend as well.
Oh, absolutely. And I think if there's anything that Jen Shah could take away from this season is one, just owning your shit and listening to what people have to say. And it's not always all about you. Like, yeah. I feel like every confrontation she has, it all turns about her and what she has going on and what I've like, it's like me. And it's never like what she has done to other people. So, I don't know. I don't know how many people are in the Shah squad. If you're one of them, I want to hear why, but I don't know why. One last note I want to make about Salt Lake, and I know you have one more thing. I just want to give Meredith Marks props for handling Andy like a pro and not discussing her marriage.
She basically didn't have to do anything at this reunion, and yet somehow I'm like, yeah, Meredith was great at the reunion.
She just showed her face. I mean, she literally has the most iconic resting bitch face of all the housewives. And it's memed like a million times over and over again. And that's the performance we all love. Like, we eat it up.
No, I can't get enough of her. I think the only person who talked less than Meredith was John Barlow, who all he said is, I can't confirm or deny. And that was the extent that we heard from him. But, you know, when you're saying you don't know why people are on the Shah squad, I think the only reason why people are is because of Coach Shah. Like, the way he can inspire and put words together and summarize, like, he just has a way with words. And like, honestly, like when I saw the way he was just like comforting Jen and giving her a hug, I'm like, God bless this man. Which then also makes you wonder, like, why would he not be at the funeral? And after watching the reunion, I think I know exactly why he wasn't there. And he kind of alluded to it and then stopped. But he said that when her dad was not doing very well, he went to go visit him. And all of a sudden, you know, Jen's dad was talking to Coach Shah and just seemed more with it. And so she was mad at him that he didn't come sooner. Cause like, had he come sooner, she thinks that he would have like somehow been, you know, healed. And we don't know what he died from. So I don't know exactly what it was. I think though, because he said he was at the wake, and I'm like, what spouse goes to a wake and then doesn't stay for the funeral, which is typically the next day, or sometimes even later that same day. I'm guessing in this situation it was the next day and he left. I kind of have a feeling that Jen lost her shit on him and said that, like, if it wasn't for you, my dad would still be alive. Don't even come to the funeral. I don't want to see you. You're the reason why my dad is dead. Like, I think she went deep. And I have a feeling that he just left so that it wasn't about them and it was about Jen grieving her dad. That's my theory.
That is a solid theory. And it's heartbreaking because, I mean, there's no right way to grieve. Obviously, she was in a lot of pain. And when you're in a lot of pain, I mean, I do this, like you kind of target the people closest to you just because it's easier. I mean, we're not perfect. I've definitely have done that. So same. I feel like your theory is valid.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I also could see why he wouldn't dive into that because he's protecting her. So who knows? We'll never really know. That probably will never, it will not be confirmed or denied. But that is Salt Lake. I'm going to miss Salt Lake. It was amazing. Season one. We're seeing things that they're already filming season two. It looks like Heather and Whitney are back. We haven't really seen anyone else with a camera, but that was as of like this afternoon that Whitney and Heather were seen being filmed having lunch.
Yeah. As far as what I keep hearing is that all the women will be coming back.
It's so wild.
It's so wild, but in a way I wouldn't change it. I know you're anti Jen Shaw, but in a way, I mean, I feel like in terms of the drama, I would like at least a season two from all these women.
I'm just shocked Mary is coming back, just given everything that was out there. But I also think she's someone that's kind of like narcissistic in a way too, that probably doesn't even really read anything negative about herself or her businesses.
Anyone on reality TV is a narcissist, I feel like, to some extent. Like
You're obsessed with yourself a little bit. Yeah. All right. Well, New Jersey. I just want to start off by saying, bravo, we get it. I get that Jennifer Aiden told Melissa that she's not going to have another baby because she's too self-absorbed. I think we've seen that flashback like four times and we're on episode two.
We have seen it a lot. And then Jennifer Aiden telling Melissa if she's looking in a mirror. Is that what she keeps saying?
Yeah. I know. I'm like, okay, I get it. But I also I kind of loved when Jennifer did that at the reunion. It was a little below the belt, but no one was buying that Melissa was going to have another baby. Oh my God.
I mean, that and the fake the sister.
Sister. Yeah.
The fake sister, that whole thing. That could be a whole nother episode, but we won't bore you with those details. But Lake George, so Jackie decides not to go. I was not surprised by that. Were you?
No, I think it was a good move. I think she knew that Teresa was out for blood. And I mean, all it would have been like Jackie would be like, would get up and go get a glass of water, you know, something simple as that. And Teresa would be like, you bitch, go get water. Why are you getting water? Like, no one would have had fun. It would have ruined the trip.
Absolutely. And I wish they would have showed this in order, but we saw it later in the episode. What was your thoughts on the conversation Teresa had with Gia? And then Gia was like, you should apologize.
It really makes me sad when I see a lot of these kids on reality shows when everyone's like, God, they're so mature and they're the voice of reason. But I'm also like, these poor children are parenting their own parents. What Gia needs right now is like a mom who isn't going to start drama to the point where someone's going to retaliate by saying her daughter, like with an analogy that her daughter is doing coke. And I just, a little bit too, I think with Gabby Aiden, you know, it's nice to see these kids are so mature and can give such great advice, but it also makes me sad because I'm like, these kids are kids. They should get to be kids.
Yeah. 1,000%. I mean, she's 20 and I mean now, and there's conversation that we've seen on the web, like, yeah, Gia's, she said that and now Gia's upset. I mean, Gia's 20. She's allowed to be upset.
Yeah.
But during filming, like, let's be real, like seeing something and hearing something is different than watching it. Like, I'm guessing she watched it all play out and now she's getting the heat of it. So let people feel their damn emotions and don't tell people how to feel.
Especially a 20-year-old. I mean, she probably doesn't know how she feels about a middle part right now, even. Like, you know, just you're at an age where everything is a big deal, but nothing is a big deal.
So a lot of big decisions, whether, you know, skinny jeans are cool or not.
She's just at a crossroads in her life. And she is. Yeah.
What road is she going to take? The straight leg row?
She's going to go wide leg because she is 20 and she's definitely going to rock a middle part and that's okay. I think my favorite part of this entire trip, it's been driving me nuts that Teresa kept saying, I thought Jackie was a strong woman who would want to know. Guess she isn't. And Teresa's like, I just thought you'd want to know. Teresa never told Jackie. She told everyone else but Jackie. So it'd been driving me crazy that no one was bringing this up. And so I was so glad that Marge's sister was like, well, Teresa didn't tell Jackie. She told everyone else at the party. And even when confronted, she didn't say like, oh, I was going to tell you first, but then the party happened. Like, I mean, like Teresa never really told Jackie.
No, not at all. I mean, Teresa is really good at deflecting, kind of like Ramona. Like,
yes,
they're very good at deflecting and not being fazed by the truth bombs being thrown at them, because their narrative is the only truth that they see and they will stick to it.
100%. What did you think about kind of like the rest of the trip? And I know you have said, I loved your meme. That was everyone. If you're ever wondering like, oh, who memed what? The haircut meme with Jackie cutting her kid's hair. I know you loved that moment as well too.
I thought it was very funny, and I can't take full credit for that meme. Kyle actually helped me craft that meme. He gets involved. The husbands like to get involved, and it was a good one. But anyhow, watching her cut her boy's hair terrified me and brought back all the flashbacks of the few times I had to cut Kyle's hair during the early part of the pandemic. I was mortified. And she was really brave to go in with those scissors. I was like, what are you doing?
I thought she seemed very confident. I didn't cut Kevin's hair. I cut my boy's hair though. More like Kevin did it one time and he did a really bad job with like their bangs in the front. And so I'm like, well, I can clearly do a better job. I didn't. They were like straight across. It looked so bad. So the quarantine haircuts, I just liked that we got to see the funnier sides, I think, of quarantine, which was the fact that, you know, none of us could go get our hair cut, our hair done. And a lot of kids were at the hands of their parents and it, you know, it didn't always look great.
I feel like there are probably a lot of bowl cuts. You had a bowl cut as a kid, didn't you?
I had a great bowl cut.
I had one too. And I fucking hated it.
Oh, I hated it. But I look back now and it's like, wow. I mean, I had a lot of volume for short hair. I don't know where that volume went, but it's gone. So I think it was funny though, that basically anytime Teresa said something about the fight with Jackie, everyone kind of looked at each other. Like I don't want to say no one is on Teresa's side, but a lot of them are like, Teresa owes Jackie an apology more than Jackie owes Teresa one.
Yeah. I mean, she spread those rumors. I think the hypocrisy of it all is just what's funny. And even Teresa saying that she found Evan attractive, but she would want to, I don't know. She was very much all over the place. And I'm very glad that Teresa has since found love and can focus on her own relationship instead of talking about other people's. But one relationship that continues to blow my mind is that of Dolores and David.
Ugh. I just never thought I would be. So first of all, I thought David was attractive last season. I just want to put that out there. Like, I loved David.
You did?
Yeah. Remember I talked about it.
I don't remember. I must have blacked that out because I don't see it.
I think he could be a very attractive man. It probably was back in the day too, but I just feel like they're not a good match for each other. Like, she made it so clear that she wanted a commitment, and the fact that he didn't give that to her, but they're acting like they're still together. It just, like, there's obviously a big disconnect as to what like the goals of this relationship are, what they both want out of it, and where they both see they're at as a relationship. So I don't know. I just feel like, honestly, I mean, everyone's like, oh, she needs to get together with Frank. I just think she needs to be single. I think she'd just be better off being single. Like, she will always be best friends with Frank. That's never going to change.
No, I think they'll be best friends. It was kind of heartwarming to see how close David and Frank are, and that David took care of Frank. Like, everyone's living in that house except Dolores. Frank's moved in. Frankie Jr.'s moved in, but Dolores hasn't. So I feel like I've heard her. Do you remember she went on Anthony's podcast and she was talking about, you know, being with a Jewish man and like the values and all the things that he brings. I feel like so much of it has to do with his character.
Yeah.
But I still think she deserves a commitment, but apparently he's got the best vagina pleasing skills and talent. I'm trying to think of a way to say that, but he knows his way around. So I don't know. I mean,
hey, good for her.
Good for her. But you're not. I don't know if
you know who else.
Commitment.
You know who else knows his way around a vagina?
Who?
Bolo.
Oh snap!
I've been waiting for this episode. And I will tell you, I thought it was more going to be about the actual stripper and the women who hooked up with him. I think I was more floored and shocked by the fact that, and this is great. I didn't realize how sexually fluid some of the women were going to be on this trip. I just wasn't expecting that. I think it's great that they are all were having fun. I just was surprised by the amount of hookups that did not include Bolo.
It was an incredible trip. Candy Burris as the mistress, her alter ego. I was like, damn, Candy, like, I want to go to this bachelorette party. I feel like I would look like Cynthia, like terrified the whole time, but also like intrigued and entertained by it all. Like I Cynthia's face as all the women were making their introductions and sharing their alter egos, her face was like cracking me up, because I feel like every woman, if you've been to a bachelorette party or been somewhere where there's a stripper involved, there's usually someone's face who looks like that until a couple more drinks kind of get in them. But it was incredible. I really loved all the characters. I love how they went all in. Candy did an incredible job. I mean, the vibrating panties that she gave Cynthia, I was dying. Productions, interviews, like Kenya S. Sharon Stone and talking about what happened. It was amazing.
It was maybe one of the best produced episodes. The Basic Instinct nod was just absolute perfection. Yeah, the women all playing their characters. And I mean, I think this was like the first time all of us got a real peek into the dungeon. Like, you know, her shows, they would kind of show a little bit of it a couple seasons ago, I think it was. Didn't we get like a little glimpse into like the dungeon?
Yeah, we did. And the dungeon came to Kansas City and I thought about going. And
well,
I don't think I would have been ready.
I don't know if I can handle the dungeon in person. I like to think I could, but I'd revert back to that seventh grade me in my khaki skirt, and I would just feel very uncomfortable.
Like Catholic school girl, all the learnings that you learned in Catholic school, I feel like you'd be like thinking about.
Yeah,
all that.
I feel like, oh God. Yeah, but I mean, I'm all for people like let your freak flag fly if it makes you happy. I just don't know if I would necessarily find it entertaining, but I loved watching it on TV.
Oh, it was great. Candy's always owned her sexuality. I mean, we remember like the Candy sex shop and the vibrator. Like I really respect someone who like is very, not that anyone should be apologetic by it by any means, but she's very like matter of fact about it. And it's a huge part of who she is. And it's empowering to watch a woman like own that, like truly and fully. So you go, girl, you get it, Candy. So Bolo and his third arm, I was giggling so much just watching everything related to Bolo. His dance, whether or not it was real, and apparently his third arm is real.
There's like videos. I haven't Googled them because, you know, at the end of the day, guys, I talk a big talk. I'm a square prude. Like I just, so I haven't, but there's like something with a melon. I didn't want to, people were posting about it. I don't know.
I heard about this too.
Like apparently his dick broke a melon. And I mean, that's a strong dick.
I mean, I'm 35 and I'm like giggling, like, so immature. I mean, that's impressive. I don't know that I need to see it. Like you said, but yeah, that is impressive. Like,
but Google it if you want to see it. I mean, like I go for it. It's out there.
He has an OnlyFans account too, apparently.
So. Of course he does. Oh my God.
I mean, so if you're really into it and need a little bit more spice in your life, check that out. But so production leaves and then we kind of get some, audible sounds and sound bites of what happened afterwards.
We see shadows moving in the dark. I mean, the women were up late. Bolo left a little bit after 7, and I don't think he got any sleep that night. I love the fact that Kenya took it upon herself to not only like investigate, but she heard sounds and stayed and listened outside the door for 45 minutes. The only time I will allow a little bit of mom shaming is in this moment, where Candy was saying how, because Kenya said she stood there, she came down to make a bottle for Brooklyn, and then she stayed down there for 45 minutes to listen to whoever was getting some action from Bolo. And Candy was like, 45 minutes? You made your baby wait 45 minutes? I don't know. Like, I just loved that.
It was funny. There was a funny meme out there. I think the baby is Gabrielle Union's daughter.
Waiting. Yeah,
waiting for that bottle. But it's just, okay. So here's the thing, my take on Kenya and whether or not, like, I feel like some people are either for her investigating and some think like she pressed too hard and like, don't say anything at all. I do think like at any bachelorette party, it is normal to have conversation of what happened last night, who did what, like, especially if you missed out on the action and there's a film crew there. Like, I think that's normal. I do think she kind of like pressed it on a little too much, a little too long.
And I don't think she needed like interrogate each person. Like, I do think she was trying to like kind of play it up and pretend like she was a lawyer and stuff, but like it kept going after the woman came back from the, you know, the boat trip. And I just think at a certain point, you just be like, okay, it sounds like a lot of people had a lot of fun. Or, because the other thing too is like, are you really going to expose this person on camera?
I mean,
I
think she wanted to and likes the fact that she can hold that over someone's head.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to kind of figure out the two people that were having.
It was Tanya and Portia. It's not that, like, you know.
Doesn't take a rocket scientist. And we've heard, if you've been following all the Bravo gossip closely, Tanya stops filming. So I don't know how that's going to transpire, but I mean, Kenya's got to be behind it.
I think Kenya also leaked the story because it came out pretty quickly that, you know, before Cynthia's wedding, we knew that two peaches were cobbled by a stripper at Cynthia's bachelorette party.
Headline of all time.
Yeah. And I mean, the only person who would have leaked that, in my opinion, is Kenya.
Oh, 1,000%. And one final note on this iconic episode is I would like to see Marlo in a life vest more often. I never knew watching her go fishing could be so entertaining.
I mean, Marlo just does everything right. I just love Marlo. But it brings us to our shout out of the week. And I mean, it has to go to Bolo, but like, who knew that a male stripper could be such a pivotal role in Housewives?
Who thought a male stripper could really unite us and bring us together and really lift our moods up?
We needed it. I mean, I think Bolo can lift a lot of things up, but my mood was one of them, and I am greatly appreciative for it. So thank you so much, Bolo. We hope you and your third leg are just out there killing it. And we hope that you guys enjoyed this recap. And so here comes the spiel. We do it every time. You can go ahead and end this episode if you are already doing all these things. But if you're not following us on Instagram at Real Moms of Bravo, subscribe to this podcast so you can know whenever a new episode comes out. And when you hit subscribe, go ahead, hit 5 stars. You probably have like another 30 seconds you can spare. Leave us a quick little review. Like we always say, it just helps with us being noticed, getting talent to get better interviews and get cool people in. Like we just had Marge and Jackie, which was so fun. And we'd love to keep having more Housewives on here. So thank you guys so much for your support. And with that, we will catch you next week.